Welcome to The Word for Today, featuring the Bible teaching of Pastor Chuck Smith, founder of the Calvary Chapel Movement. This radio program is a verse-by-verse study through the entire Bible.
And on today's edition of The Word for Today, Pastor Chuck continues with entrapping questions as we pick up in Mark chapter 12, verse 14. And now with today's message, here's Pastor Chuck.
Judah was a Roman province. As a Roman province, the governor was directly appointed by Rome, and the Roman government excised taxes from them that were paid directly to the Roman government, and there were three basic taxes. First of all, you were taxed on the land that you had, and you had to give one-tenth of your crop to the government, that is your grains and all from the fields. You had to give one-fifth of the fruit, that which grew from the trees that were there on the land. Secondly, there was a straight across the board 5% income tax. And then thirdly, you had to pay each year a denarius to the government just for the right of existing. This was a tax upon everyone, a denarius because you lived. And so the Jews hated this taxation. They did not really recognize the Roman authority over them. And this question then was a very clever question designed to entrap Jesus, for no matter how he answers, he's a loser. If he answers, it is lawful to pay the taxes to Caesar, then all of these Jews that hate these taxes so much will turn away and not listen to him again. If he says it is not lawful to pay the taxes to Caesar, then they'll run right down and report on him and have him arrested as a leader of sedition. So they felt that the question was one from which he could not escape. Very cleverly designed question. Probably took them quite a long time to figure that one out. Shall we give or shall we not give? But he, knowing their cunningness, said unto them, "Why are you trying to tempt me? Bring me a denarius that I may see it." Now, this was the denarius that they had to pay for existing. And, of course, it had the current Roman emperor, who at this time was Titus, his little image upon it. Interesting to me that Jesus didn't carry a coin. He asked for one. And he held it up. And he said, "Whose is this image or superscription?" And it would have the picture and under it the superscription, "Pontifex Maximus." "Who is this?" He said, "Caesar." So he flipped the coin back and said, "If it's Caesar's, give it to Caesar. But give to God the things that belong to God." Now, in reality, these coins were all considered to be Caesar's, the government's. The people were able to use them. But in reality, they considered that it was all the government's. Even as your money all says Federal Reserve note or whatever, it's really the government's loaning you this medium of exchange or letting you use this medium of exchange. So Jesus thoroughly escaped the trap that they were setting for him. And they marveled at him. How about that? Then there came to him some of the Sadducees. Now, the Sadducees were the priests for the most part. The high priest at this time was always a Sadducee. They were the materialist. They were not really spiritual men at all, but the materialist. But they had gained control of the whole religious system. And they did not believe in spirits. They did not believe in angels. They did not believe in the resurrection from the dead. So they said, "Master, Moses wrote unto us, if a man's brother die, and he leaves his wife behind him, and leaves no children, his brother should take his wife and raise up seed for his brother. Now, this was a part of the Mosaic Law. It is given to us there in Deuteronomy. And it's a very interesting law. And the purpose, of course, was that the family name not die in Israel. And basically, the law is like this. If you married a woman, and before you could have children, you died, it was your brother's responsibility to marry her, and the first son that was born would be named after you so that your name would not die in Israel. Now, say your younger brother doesn't want to marry her. She says, hey, no, I don't want anything to do with that woman. She gave my brother such a bad time. Well, no way, you know. Not going to stick me with that one. Then they would come to the gate of the city where judgment was always made. You read them in the gates of the city. That's where they always made the judgments. The elders of the city would be there in the gates to pass judgment. So they would come to the gate of the city before the judges, the elders there, and the fellow would say, my brother died, didn't have any kids, and I don't want to marry her. And he'd take off his sandal and hand it to her. It's sort of like saying, hey, woman, you're an old dirty shoe as far as I'm concerned. You know, no way. And she would spit in his face. And he would be released from the obligation of marrying her. But he was called the man from whom the shoe was loosed in Israel. He got that title after that. It was sort of a dirty title. In other words, he wouldn't fulfill the family obligation. And that was a very important thing to them. Now, in the book of Genesis, and this goes back before the law, actually, in the book of Genesis, we find the case of Judah, the son of Jacob, and his son married this gal, Tamar. And he died not having any children, so Tamar's brother took her to wife, and he died not having any children, and so the other brother was supposed to marry her, but Judah said, well, no, I'm a little worried about the tea that gal fixes, you know, you know, two sons died, and he said, this is my last son, I don't want to lose him. He's too young, wait a while, you know, before let him marry you. And the story of Tamar, interesting story in Genesis. She put on the clothes of a prostitute and sat in the way when Judah was coming by, the old man. He says, how much you charge, you know, and so she gave the price, and he said, I don't have it with me, but here, you know, I'll take my ring. And this is where we get the idea of giving a ring. It's a pledge to guarantee that I'm going to keep the covenant I make. I promise you, you know, I'll pay you this little. And of course, she covenanted for a little goat. He says, I'll send it back to you, you know. And she said, well, you know, what pledge do you give? Well, take the ring, you know. And so he gave her the ring and said, you know, and the idea is, I'm going to keep the promise. I'll send the goat. And when the goat comes, she gives the ring back. Well, he went in unto her. You see, she felt that she was getting cheated because he didn't give the third son. And so she was all veiled and everything else and had the veil of a prostitute on her and all. So he went in and then went on down and he said to his herdman, hey, take a goat back to the prostitute that's back there in that corner, you know, and get my ring back. And so the guy came back with the goat, and he looked around, and he said to the fellows around there, hey, where's the prostitute that hangs out on this corner? There's no prostitute around here. So he came back to Judah and said, man, I couldn't find it. It said there's no prostitute around there. So later on, word came to Judah, Tamar is pregnant. He said, have her stoned to death. So Tamar came in and she said, by the man who owns this ring, I'm pregnant. And Judah, of course, had it, you know. What could he do? So the interesting thing to me is that as the lineage of Christ is traced back, it traces back through Tamar. That's interesting, isn't it? That God would bring his son through this lineage. He was able to identify with sinners. Another case of it in the Old Testament is in the book of Ruth. Elimelech with his wife Naomi, sold their parcel, and moved with their two sons, Mahlon and Chilion, over to Moab. And in Moab, Mahlon and Chilion married some young girls in Moab, and Elimelech died, and the two sons died, and there were no children. So the name was about ready to die. Naomi, of course, came back with Ruth, and later on, Boaz, who was a brother to Elimelech, married Ruth and raised up. He became the what they call the Goel, the family redeemer. He's the one that redeemed the family name by having a child through Ruth, whose name was Obed, whose son's name was Jesse, whose son's name was David. And in tracing the lineage of the line of Christ, it goes back through Ruth and Boaz. So this idea of a kinsman redeemer is tied into the lineage of Jesus, which I think is significant because that's what he came to be. He became a man that he might be kin to us, but his purpose was to redeem us. Man couldn't redeem himself. And so he became a man that he might become our kinsman redeemer. And in two places in his lineage, that particular Jewish law was kept, fulfilled. So here, the Sadducees, they go an extra step. They create a hypothetical case where there were seven brothers, and the first took a wife, and he died without any children. So the second took her and died without any children, and the third likewise. And all seven married her and died without any children. And finally, the woman died. Now, in the resurrection, when they shall rise, whose wife shall she be of them? For all seven were married to her. Now, you see, they were creating a hypothetical case by which they were trying to show that the idea of the resurrection from the dead could only create a lot of problems. And here is a big problem. Because you can see seven guys now fighting over the one woman, for she had been married to all seven, but none of them had any children. And they pictured this big confusion at the resurrection. Of course, there are others who have foreseen great problems with the resurrection. Say you have a kidney transplant. Who gets the kidney in the resurrection? Our bodies are made up of chemicals. And when a person died out on the prairie and they dug a hole and buried him, the body decomposed into the various chemicals. And the little prairie grass sent its roots down and fed off of the chemicals from the decomposed body. And those chemicals were drawn up through the root and into the prairie grass, and the cows came and ate that prairie grass with the chemicals from somebody's body. And someone milked the cow and got the chemicals out of the milk and drank the milk and assimilated, and it became a part of his body. Now in the resurrection, what body will get these chemicals? These same difficulties that people have hypothecated all stem from the same ignorance that Jesus said, "You fellows err because you don't know the scriptures and you don't know the power of God." Your mistake lies in the fact that you don't know the scriptures. You're ignorant of the scriptures, and that's where your problem is. "For when they shall rise from the dead, they neither marry nor are given in marriage, but are as the angels which are in heaven. Now, as touching the dead, that they rise." And Jesus is affirming the resurrection of the dead here. "Have you not read in the book of Moses?" Now, the Sadducees, being the materialist, rejected all of the Old Testament except for the five books of Moses. And they said, there is no place where immortality or resurrection is taught in the Pentateuch. That all came along later with the prophets and all, but there's nothing in the Pentateuch. So Jesus takes them to the Pentateuch. Have you not read in the book of Moses how in the bush when God spoke to Moses, he said unto him, I am the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. And Jesus said, he's not the God of the dead, but of the living. And with their own book of Moses, he really cut them down. Now, there was a certain scribe that was there, and he was watching this whole transaction, interchange of thoughts and ideas, and he was captivated by Jesus and his answers that he gave. When he heard them reasoning together, he perceived that Jesus was really coming up with some excellent answers. And so he asked him an honest question. These first two questions were dishonest questions. A dishonest question is a question that is not looking for an answer. It's looking for an argument. An honest question seeks an answer. I want to know. I ask a question. That's honesty. I have a point I want to prove. I want to get into an argument with you and show you you're wrong. I ask a question. I'm really not wanting your answer. I don't care what you answer. Your answer is wrong. And I'm going to prove it to you. And there's a lot of times that we are questioned by people, and the questions are not sincere. They're not honest questions. And one of the first things, and I can tell quite often by the question itself, whether it's an honest or dishonest question. When a person says, why don't you baptize people the moment they accept Jesus? I know that's not an honest question. They really don't want to know why we don't take you right down to the beach tonight and baptize you if you've accepted the Lord here this evening. They don't want to really know that. What they want to do is get in a big controversy with you because they do believe in baptismal regeneration. And should you die before next Saturday and your chance to get baptized, according to their theology, you'd be lost. So emergency baptisms, you know, get them in the tank as quick as possible, you know, and dunk them. And so they ask that question, and you know it's not an honest question. I really don't like to get into a controversy over the scripture. The minute I can discern that a question is not an honest question, I'll quit talking. I mean, I'm not interested in getting in a dispute or an argument. The Bible says, they that are ignorant, let them be ignorant still. That could apply to me as well as the next fellow. This fellow has an honest question burning in his heart. It is a question that should concern every man who has become convinced of the existence of God. You say you believe in God. Hey, you can't rest there. You can't stop there. You see, if you believe that God does exist, then suddenly, as you start to develop from that basic concept, God exists, you start going out from there and you've got to handle a lot of things. I grew up in a very godly Christian home. I believed in Jesus Christ from day one. From the time I was 13 days old, I was carried to church, slept in the pews. Grew up in a, you know, in the whole environment and atmosphere. Yet, as every teenager, I think, must do, I came to that place in my own growth and development and maturing where I had to create my own relationship with God and develop my own foundation and my own theology and my own building, you might say, of faith. And as I was going through that period, being challenged intellectually by my studies, by my philosophy classes and biology classes and all, there was a short period of time when I was questioning everything, and I began to question the existence of God. And I wondered if I really believed that God did exist. Maybe there is something to atheism. Maybe it is all just something that has been conjured up by man. And I went through a couple of weeks of real misery as I was sort of in this place of floating and almost sinking as these thoughts were coming, maybe God doesn't exist. And maybe it is just all, you know, man's concepts and ideas as he needs to believe in something. And as I was going through this in my mind, I started to sink. And then I thought, well, it is easier to believe that God exists than to not believe that he exists.
We'll return with more of our verse-by-verse Bible study in the book of Mark on our next broadcast as Pastor Chuck continues to teach through the Bible. And we do hope you'll make plans to join us. But right now, if you'd like to order a copy of today's message, simply order Mark 12 when visiting thewordfortoday.org. And while you're there, be sure to browse the many additional biblical resources by Pastor Chuck. You can also subscribe to the Word for Today podcast or sign up for our email subscription. Once again, that's thewordfortoday.org. For those of you wishing to call, our toll-free number is 1-800-272-WORD, and our office hours are Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Pacific Time. Again, that's 1-800-272-9673. If you prefer to write, our mailing address is The Word for Today, P.O. Box 8000, Costa Mesa, California, 92628. And now, on behalf of The Word for Today, we'd like to thank all of you who share in supporting this ministry with your prayers and financial support. And be sure to join us again next time as Pastor Chuck continues his verse-by-verse study through the Bible. That's right here on the next edition of The Word for Today. And now, once again, here's Pastor Chuck.
May the Lord be with you and bless you and keep you in his love and grace. May the Lord watch over you, and may you be filled with his Spirit and walk in the strength and in the power of the Spirit of God as he anoints you day by day. May you be enabled by him, and may you enter into that fullness that he has for you, walking with the Lord, loving the Lord, listening to the Lord. May your mind and heart be clear, sensitive to God and to the things of the Spirit. In Jesus' name.
This program has been sponsored by Calvary Chapel of Costa Mesa, California.
The Word for Today would like to invite you to come along on a revolutionary study of the Bible as we introduce Pastor Chuck's Genesis commentary in an ebook format. Not only will you have Pastor Chuck's in-depth commentary, this ebook allows access to enhanced research studies by honored Christian scholars instantly. Features include Hebrew and Greek word definitions, as well as images of historical maps and places just by clicking or touching your screen, an online dictionary, plus highlighting, note-taking, and bookmarking. And everywhere Pastor Chuck shares what he learned or studied something, you now have access to those very same notes. So get ready to study the Bible in a whole new way. Now you don't have to imagine what it was like to be there. This is the next best thing. To find out how to download Pastor Chuck's Genesis commentary to your electronic device, please call The Word for Today at 800-272-9673. Or to watch a video demonstration, visit us online at thewordfortoday.org.